What I'm going to do this morning is I'm going to tell Matthew 22 to 33. It's slightly different than reading it. It's called text telling. Some of you might have heard me do it before, some may not. And it involves, I suppose, it's prayerfully remembrancing a piece of the Bible and then sort of telling it back to the congregation and done with much love and prayer. And so this bit, is going to be Matthew 14, 22 to 33. To put everything in context, what happened just before this was Jesus had received the really sad news that John the Baptist had been beheaded. And he'd withdrawn to the backwaters of Galilee in a boat with the disciples. And I guess he was probably mourning. And, you know, it was probably quite a difficult time for him. But the crowds heard where he was and they came, they followed him. And he took pity on them and he preached and he healed. And eventually it led to the feeding of the 5,000. Although, to be honest, it was probably a lot more than 5,000. It says 5,000 men. If you count women and children, it was probably double that. So this piece of text takes place sort of immediately after that, when the crowds were still around. So immediately, Jesus told the disciples to get into the boat and go to the other side while he dismissed the crowds. When he dismissed the crowds, he went up the mountain by himself to pray. When evening came, he was there alone. But by this time, the boat, battered by the waves, was far from land. And he was there alone, and the wind was against them. When morning came, Jesus walked towards the disciples on the sea. And when the disciples in the boat saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified and said, "It's a ghost," and they cried out in fear, "Ah!" But Jesus immediately spoke and said, "Take heart, it's I, don't be afraid." And Peter answered him and said, "Lord, if it is you, command me come to you on the water." And Jesus said, "Come." So Peter got out of the boat and started walking on the water and came towards Jesus. And when he got there, he noticed the high winds and he became afraid. And sinking, he shouted, "Lord, save me." And Jesus immediately reached out his hand, caught him and said, "You have little faith. Why did you doubt?" When they got onto the boat, the wind ceased. And the people in the boat worshipped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." So I love that story. That's Peter actually taking part in one of Jesus' miracles. And it was going fantastically well. And Peter had his eyes and his focus on Jesus. And then he took his eyes off Jesus and he took his focus off. And he lost confidence, and he was distracted, and he started to sink. And that makes me think, really, reading that, and I read it a few times this week, you know, have we lost confidence, and are we sinking? You know, maybe life hasn't turned out as we've expected, we're buried in busyness, with our jobs, with schoolwork, with our social life, with what I like to call the weapons of mass distraction, which are the internet, the phone, and the television. And I think in modern society, we suffer from two diseases that affect us all, really. And in my lifetime, it's definitely got worse. And the first one is hypermobility. We can go anywhere, really. Because of modern transport and trains and cars and planes and buses, we can go anywhere. And I think that leads us to the danger of cramming in too much. Because we can, we do. If you pardon the pun, we're literally driven by our cars. We go to work, we come home, we do the school run, we pick people up, we drop people off, we go here, we socialise, we do our shopping and all that. And in the end, I think we're like, almost like dogs chasing our tails, going round and round and round, being pushed and driven. Whereas I think probably a long time ago, people did less and they took longer to do it. So I think hypermobility, the cars, is great in one way, but it kind of wounds us in another. And I think the other great evil is hypercommunication. It's the phone. It's people are never switched off. They're forever, I mean, you've probably seen people on trains, they're forever, you know, mesmerized by their phone, or you'll be talking to somebody and they'll be texting, or the phone will go and they'll ignore what's going on between you and they'll get involved in that. And you never have time to listen to that small, still voice. You're never kind of off duty, you're never offline. And I do a lot of cycling to and from work and college and that. And I see people a lot on their phones in their cars. And believe it or not, I see people driving along texting, which I'm absolutely amazed they can do. In fact, I went to a conference a couple of years back, and I was sat next to a psychiatrist, and he was texting on two phones simultaneously while trying to listen to the speaker. And I'm thinking, can we really multitask? Or is it just that we do more things, but we don't do them very well? And I think the phone's a massive, massive source of distraction. And like I said, while Peter was focusing on Jesus, he was involved in miracles. So maybe we need to take a step back, and maybe we need to slow down. I don't know if you know it, at the moment it's kind of a little bit in, but there's this thing called hygge. It's spelled H-Y-G-G-E, and it's a Danish thing, and the Danish people tend to, in all surveys done in the last quite a lot of years, rank either at the top or second for contentment with their life and happiness. And people have tried to sort of research why that is, and there's some sort of strange things, like they tend to socialise only in quite small groups, so where there's maybe not lots of distraction. They tend to focus on being in the moment and trying to wring out of every present activity they're doing the most value. I think they live slower lives than we do, and they're less driven. They have short working hours. And I think the shop's probably shut on Saturday at midday or something like that. And certainly, they have a lot of time where they're not being pulled this way and that way by consumerism and by going here and there and everywhere. I'm not saying they're perfect, but maybe there's some lessons to learn about focus, about being in the moment. How many times have you done this? And I've done this. I'm doing something, but actually I'm not really concentrating on that. I'm thinking of what I'm going to be doing next, or even maybe what I'm going to be doing after that, so that the people I'm with or the activity I'm on, I'm not really paying full attention to it. And I feel quite challenged, really, because I do that with God sometimes. I'll be praying, and then my mind will wander, and I'll start thinking of something else, or what I'm going to be having for tea, or what I'm doing next, or my next essay. And I really have to try and bring myself back to that kind of simplicity of mind. And I wonder if we can learn anything about that, a simplicity of living. What do you do in your lives that you can shed? What do you do that's not really necessary? How do you carve out time to engage with God? You know, you could switch your phone off. Around the meal table, in the NHS, we have this thing called protected meal times. So that when we have meal times, we don't allow doctors or visitors or anybody else on the ward. It's just the staff and the patients, so that people can concentrate on the food. Because they found, especially on the elderly wards, people weren't eating very well because there were lots of visitors coming in and there was lots happening, and people got distracted and they were not concentrating on what they were doing, and people were losing weight and getting ill. You know, before bedtime, go to bed early, switch off the TV early, you know, in dead spaces while you're waiting for a train or a bus. There's lots and lots of times you can intend your mind towards God. Because I find, I don't know about you, but I find keeping my eyes on God actually gives me more time, and it gives me a lot more peace. And if that seems like a really, really big task, and I think it is really with the way we live today, it just reminds me of a story, and I've probably told it before, and it's very short, and I'll probably tell it again. And I don't know if it's a true story or not, but it was about a little boy, and I think he was either in Australia or in America, and he was on a beach. And on this beach, millions of starfish had washed up. Now, I know that does happen because I had a friend who used to be a diver, and he worked on the Barrier Reef in Australia. And every few years, they'd get millions of these crown of thorns starfish, and they'd come and eat the coral. And he was paid as a diver to go down, and I think they injected them with iron or iodine or something to kill them, to stop them destroying the Barrier Reef. So these things happen. So there was these millions of starfish, and there was a little boy throwing the starfish back in, and an adult comes up to him and says, "What are you doing?" He says, "Well, I'm saving these starfish." And the adult said, "Well, You can't save them all. Look, there's millions of them." He said, "In fact, you can save virtually none of them." He said, "I know, but if I can just do this one at a time, I can save one at a time." And I think it's a bit like that, and it's a bit like that sort of saying, how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time? So if you're looking at ways of changing your life, you don't need to make big changes, you can make small changes. I started off by just trying to, at the minimum, just pray while I was in bed before I fell asleep. I mean, a lot of the times I fell asleep while I was praying, but it was a start, and I think it's good to start somewhere. So you can creatively think about, you know, different places in your life where you can let God in more. Because I'm aware it can be really easy to just come on Sunday, and I'm not being critical because I've done the same, and then you go through your really busy week, and then you come back again and re-engage with God on a Sunday. And God loves us, and he loves that we do that, but I think he'd want us to spend more time with him. And I think by us spending more time, you know, we'd get a lot more out of that relationship. And I would say, if you're not doing very well, and I often don't do very well, don't beat yourself up. You've got a great example there. Peter, he'd just seen the feeding of the 5,000 or 10,000 people. He'd just been involved in a miracle. He was going to be the rock on which Jesus was going to build the church. And he got distracted and he lost confidence and he started to sink. But I love that, where Jesus held out his hand. And I always imagine, and we don't know because we just have the text, we don't know how he said it, but I imagine him when he said, you know, you have little faith, why did you doubt? Saying it in a loving way, in a kind of a coaching way, rather than being sort of punitive and telling him off. Because I think Jesus, he knew Peter's brokenness, and he knows our brokenness. So I just want to say that today, really, about steeping ourselves in prayer. Because we do have an enemy, and he will do all he can to distract us and take our eye off the ball. And a famous college lecturer a few years ago, and I can't remember where it was, said to his students when they came in for the first year, I want you to try and pray for an hour every morning. And he said, if you do that, he said, by the end of the term, I will guarantee to tell you which of you have been doing that. And every time he did that, he got it right. Because he could obviously see that the prayer had made a difference in their lives. And if we can even kind of do that in a really small way, I think it'll make a fantastic difference in our lives. And it isn't just all about us and navel gazing, because I think we can take that prayer and we can take that love of God and it can overflow out of our hearts and affect everyone we meet. And it can be missional. We can take that out to every person we meet. It's mission. And, you know, the overflow of our heart and the overflow of our love for God is love for other people. And seeing people as being made in Jesus' image, in God's image. Thank you.
So we're going to do a prayer activity now. Can I just have a couple of volunteers to come?